Psalm 116. Okay, does anybody have a testimony or praise or... Yes, sir, Brother Paul?
Yes, I do. Deborah's niece, Laura James, told me today that she got saved yesterday.
Oh, good.
Best news I heard all day.
Amen. That's good, Jen. Well, that's good. Anybody else? Maria? So Ewan's going to be a bona fide truck driver. Okay, Mom. Amen. Okie dokie. Anybody else? See, Brother Bill made it in. Long drive for him. Was it 2.5, 3? 3 hours. Okay, we're done. Let's go home. Oh, may the Lord bless him for that traveling. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask that you'd help us to be faithful students of this book, these words. And Lord, I do pray that you'd help us to honor your words and give us a heart and that we might desire what this book says. And if we need to make some changes, do that, whether it be attitude or actions, whether it's to start doing something we have quit doing, or whether it's to make some, do a 180 like Peter would often do, just change 180 degrees. And Lord, I pray you'd help us to honor your words. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Psalm 116. Okay, many of the messages that Jesus Christ gave during his earthly ministry were obviously, they were doctrinally Old Testament doctrine, operating under Judaism, the Mosaic law. Okay, but then he would often sprinkle in some ideas about the second coming and the tribulation time period. And of course, as we've been going through the Psalms, we have seen by the doctrine that most of these will be aimed at the tribulation and second coming. And Psalm 116 is no different, especially when we have some very obvious statements at the end of verse 3, where it says, I found trouble and sorrow. Okay, and then you can see that the Judaism is the main thrust of the religion when he has talks about sacrifices. Okay, and then verse 16, he says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. And the tribulation time period, there will be more death of God's people at that time period than any time period in history. Okay, and so this psalm will deal with tribulation. Okay, then the next psalm, 117, is the shortest of all the psalms. And then Psalm 118, verse 9 and 10, 8, 9, and 10 around that range is the actual middle part of the Bible. if you go by the verses. Okay, and then Psalm 119 is obviously the longest psalm. Okay, so 116 verse 1, he says, I love the Lord because he hath heard my voice and my supplications, because he hath inclined his ear unto me. Therefore will I call upon him as long as I live. The greatest encouragement to pray more is getting answers to prayer. Okay, and the amazing thing about answers to prayer is that you and I are one of 6 billion on this planet. And here, most of our prayers are very simply, change my circumstances. That's most of our prayers. Okay, change my circumstance, whether it's a person, whether it's a situation I'm in, or whether, you know, whatever it is. That's about basically it. We don't like our circumstances, so we're asking God to change them. Okay, and who is he to listen to us? Why should he take time to listen to you and I? Now, granted, the one thing that God has plenty of is time, an eternal being, where you and I are limited by time. Okay, and so when you get an answer to prayer, okay, those are times that should encourage and will encourage a person to pray more. Okay, so he says, I love the Lord because he heard me. He doesn't have to. Okay, but that's the blessing thing about God. Okay, and he's got, he could hear the prayers, and when we do not get our way or the circumstances that we are desiring to change, then the Lord is wanting us to learn something from it. Okay, and he may or may not ever change the plans or circumstances, but he wants you and I to get something out of it. And a lot of times, people, like in health world, especially alternative health, a lot of times you read so and such, such and such book by some author, and usually that author received some benefits from that change of behavior. That's why they're writing this, you know, this, you know, is going to cure all cures, where maybe it helped them, but that doesn't mean it's going to help somebody else. Most health methods is very simple. Stop what you're doing. You know, forget the American Standard Diet, SSAD, Standard American Diet. Okay, and just change that and then start doing some, discover something different. But the idea is that a person's got to educate themselves, learn themselves. So what you do, I do, is I ask God for wisdom. And so what God does often in our prayers, when we want circumstances changed, he may or may not do it. Okay, and so verse 1, I love the Lord because he hath heard my voice and my supplications. Supplications is asking for supplies. Okay, and that's verse 2, he's inclined, the idea is he's dropped his head and held his finger out, his ear. He's inclined his ear unto me, therefore will I call upon him as long as I live. Okay, the most frustrating thing in the Christian life is those times of spiritual drought when you feel like your prayers are hitting the ceilings. And you will go through those cycles. Okay, now this person here, verse 3, gets pretty bad for him. If this is a tribulation psalm, okay, it says, the sorrows of death compass me and the pains of hell get hold upon me. I found trouble and sorrow. The perfect individual to illustrate that is Jonah. Well, he's in the belly of the whale. He calls it hell. Okay, and then his soul did go to hell. Okay, the sorrows of death compass me. Okay, of course, none of us have experienced this. None of us. Okay, if you can imagine being a Christian in Saudi Arabia, during the time of absolute chaos. Okay, not just during now, where Saudi Arabia, you know, they got money, oil, and everything. But when it gets to be a time of rioting and chaos, and you're a believer in Jesus Christ, knowing that anyone walking down the street or anyone can come knock on your door, knowing you're a believer in Jesus Christ, and take you out and kill you. Okay, or like in Korea, North Korea, I'm sorry, in particular, where the average lifespan of a believer is 18 months. From time to get saved until the time they die is 18 months. That's North Korea. Okay, and so this is a time that's an amazing time period. The sorrows of death compass me. Okay, and the pains of hell get hold upon me. And then when he says, I found trouble. I don't have a excuse me. I don't have a cross reference for trouble because it occurs so much in the Psalms. By this part of the Psalms, I would hope you'd have Jeremiah 30 verse 7 mention Jacob's trouble. So that's the doctrinal time period. Verse 4, it says, then called I upon the name of the Lord. O Lord, I beseech thee, deliver my soul. Okay, delivering his soul from prisons, from the court structures during the tribulation time period. Deliver my soul from the religious ceremony that they intend to use this person for. Sacrifice them. So he's calling upon the name of the Lord, and then he says, verse 5, gracious is the Lord. But not just gracious, it says, and righteous. Okay, those are, some of these words seem to be oxymorons, like truth and mercy, the next psalm. Truth is absolute truth and justice, and mercy is giving somebody a break. In this context, gracious is the Lord, okay, the gracious part of God, that's what Jonah knew that God was, and this is why he, in Jonah chapter 4, verse 2, Jonah knew God was gracious and merciful, and Jonah had a hunch, thank you very much, Jonah had a hunch that the Lord was going to save those people. Okay, so verse 5, gracious is the Lord and righteous. Okay, righteous, when a person is righteous and true to God and faithful, in this case God, and gracious, knowing that that God has killed people in the past for disobeying him, like Adam and Eve, like Achan, the one where that woman was stabbed with a spear and then God's anger was appeased. Okay, where some of the offenses that we've committed against God, being upset with him, God would obviously could take us out anytime he wants. And he's gracious when he doesn't. Okay, and the gracious part of God and righteous. Okay, yea, our God is merciful. Okay, now, a lot of times people would say the God in the Old Testament is a God of justice and judgment. The God of the New Testament is a God of love. But that's, you know, God's nature is same Old Testament and New Testament. We're reading Old Testament verses about God being gracious. That is a character trait. Okay, and let's see if I got cross references there. Only put one there for gracious. You can go with Jonah chapter 4. That's the Jonah 4 verse 2, Nehemiah 9, 6 I think is another one, where it says that God is ready to pardon. Make sure I get to Nehemiah. Okay, Nehemiah 9. Five. Yeah. where it says that, stand up, bless the Lord your God forever and ever. Blessed be thy glorious name, which is exalted above all blessing and praise. Okay, and then Jonah chapter 4, where God is gracious. Okay, God is gracious. That's an attribute of the God of the Bible that's totally different than Allah. Allah is not the God of the Bible, and that's totally different of all other pagan gods. Okay, verse 6, the Lord preserveth the simple. Okay, now that doesn't mean you walk around and just be dumb. Simple-minded, honest, sincere, humble-minded. The Lord preserveth the simple. God, He watches out. Interesting. This morning, you know, I was getting ready to go work on a property, and I walk out to the truck, and I saw a cat on the road, and I said, oh, boy. And poor Lindsay's kitty cat got his head squished. And how long we had that cat? 4 weeks? 3-4 weeks? And I said, oh, boy, here we're going to go with this. So we going, I put the cat in the van. I'm going to go give him a decent burial or whatever. And go tell Lindsay, and she's, crying, of course. So I'm driving out to the property, and I'm thinking, Lord, you knew where that cat was going. What was the purpose of having that cat get killed? Maybe one less cat in the world. I don't know. But obviously, the Lord's got his reasons. And it wasn't even an hour, and I get a phone call, and Jan says that a neighbor got talking to Ashley as Ashley's walking down the road, and he gets talking. He said, do you know anybody that wants a cat? I mean, this other one wasn't even dead, 2 hours probably. And so now she's got another cat to give her love to, a little kitten. And so then I'm sitting there thinking, okay, if I die, I wonder if God's going to give her a dad that quick. And the answer was is yes. Do you know who the dad would be? Because he becomes a father of orphans. He takes care of the simple. The young don't have a dad or mom. Okay, Psalms 27, verse 10 says, when my mother and father forsake me, the Lord will take me up. Man, what better? You couldn't get any better than that. Okay, and so the Lord preserveth the simple there. And then he says, I was brought low and he helped me. Okay, I was brought low. This Jew in the tribulation time period, the lowly mind, James chapter 1 and 2, okay, these are the ones that Satan is going to be taken advantage of and obviously going to kill, but yet the Lord's going to help him. Now, does that mean the Lord is going to get him out of the mess? No, verse 15 implies that they're going to go ahead and die. But he's going to give them comfort and help them through it. You see, where Luke chapter 12, okay, it says that Luke 12, verse 11 and 12, around that range, when these people are hauled into court, he tells them, don't meditate about what you got to say, don't worry about it, because the Spirit of God is going to speak through you. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to win the case. All it means is that these people who hear them testify will not be able to gainsay against them, will not be able to refute what they say, and so they may still execute them, but these people have absolutely no excuse, and anybody in that proceedings will get one or two who may have a humble mind, who sees the peace that this person has. This is where the blood of the martyrs becomes the seed of the church. Okay, and there's a story of a Chinese pastor, and he's alive, I think, today. But he'd gotten beat so many times by the soldiers, in prison and everything, and he knew they were going to order him to, wipe up the blood and everything, his own blood. And so after, one recent beating where he got beat up and everything, they didn't have to tell him anything. He just went and got the bucket and water and started cleaning up the mess, okay, from them beating on him. And those soldiers, they couldn't understand that. Okay, and now only the Spirit of God can help a man do that. That is not human nature. Okay, and that's what God can do. Okay, so they're going to die, but the Lord is going to help them. Verse 7, return unto thy rest, O my soul. Okay, return unto thy rest. The rest is the fellowship with the Lord Himself. Jesus said, come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Now, a person tends to think, okay, good, I need rest. I need to, you know, relax and all that stuff. Then he says, though, take my yoke upon you. Okay? His rest is work. But it's his work. But it's doing his work because you are in love with Jesus Christ. Okay, return unto thy rest. Isaiah 26, verse 3 and 4 says, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. Okay, and that's part of this rest or this peace that a person has. Return unto thy rest, O my soul, for the Lord hath dealt bountifully with thee. Okay, this bountiful dealing with this person, in this context, is he's going to die. And in Acts chapter 4, or chapter 5, verse 41, 42, when the apostles were beaten for Jesus Christ, suffer for Jesus Christ, they didn't cry the mully grubs or anything. They rejoiced because they said that we have been found worthy to suffer shame for His name. Now again, that's an attitude that goes against human nature, goes against the flesh. And it even got to the point where Paul, probably the greatest Christian, said that he rejoiced in infirmities and in weaknesses and hardships. Okay, because when he is weak, then God is strong. And the thing is that when you go through a difficult time, if you're trying to draw close with the Lord, sometimes you can be excited about it because you're anticipating the answer that God's going to give. Okay, this is what Romans chapter 5, verse 3, 4, and 5 says, that after experience, you have hope. Okay, and because from experience that you've can't figure this out, that means if they don't work, then I'm getting closer to what may work. Okay, and that's where the hope comes in. Verse 8, for thou hast delivered my soul from death, mine eyes from tears, and my feet from falling. Okay, up to this point, then he says, I will walk before the Lord in the land of the living. That's about the promise of the millennial reign, where he is going to promise that he's going, if he does die, he's going to get resurrected and live again during the millennium. Verse 10, he says, I believed, therefore have I spoken. And I was greatly afflicted. Okay, I believed. Believe what God says. Paul said in Acts 27, verse 25, he says, I believed God even as it was told me. Now, in that context, a person will say, well, yeah, I believe God as it was told me too. Yeah, but in that context of that statement is when the ship is going down. And there's a storm raging, and it's Euroclydon. It's like a hurricane. Okay, and the ship, they've been throwing stuff off the ship, and they've been fighting the storm for a long time, and an angel appeared to him, the Lord appeared to Paul, and said, ship's going to be lost, but all the souls are going to be saved. Okay, a plane going down, everybody's surviving it in the midst of a storm. And Paul just told the guy, he says, I believe God even has told me. Okay, and that, it's like when the Lord told Abraham, you're going to have a boy. Yeah. Yeah, adoption agency? I'm too old. And he believed God. Okay, believing God in spite of the circumstances. Okay, I believe, therefore have I spoken, I was greatly afflicted. Then he said, I said in my haste, all men are liars. Okay, I said in my haste, well, you can say it not in your haste too, but all men are liars. Now, lying is not just an outright lie. Lying is anything from 99.9% truth to zippo. That's lying. Lying can actually be not even saying something untruthful. It's taking truth and misapplying it. See, lying is an amazing thing. The innuendos that people say, okay, and or the ideas, the truthful ideas that are left out. Okay, well, I told him this car was there. Did you tell him everything? Okay, and so all men are liars. Now, in this context, in a time period when the best of men are like a weed or a briar, I have the cross-reference here going to Micah chapter 7. Okay, Micah chapter 7, the first few verses, and the closer that we get to the Lord's coming, the more wicked men become. And in the tribulation time period, there's going to be such a gap between the righteous and the wicked that it's going to be like the Grand Canyon. Where a lot of people nowadays, Christians, are deceived or hoodwinked today because they don't see somebody like a Joel Osteen as a wicked man. He's a charlatan. He's a lying, two-faced hypocrite. But they don't see, oh, he's a nice-looking one, clean-cut one. Okay, but they don't see that because the wicked and the appearance of righteousness is interwoven where it's difficult to tell them apart. Where in the tribulation time period, that is going to be such a gap, it'll be easy to tell them apart. Micah chapter 7 is a description of the character of people at the end, or the tribulation. Micah 7 verse 1, he says, "Woe is me, for I am as when they have gathered the summer fruits as the grape gleanings of the vintage. There is no cluster to eat. My soul desired the first ripe fruit. The good man is perished out of the earth, and there is none upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. They hunt every man his brother with a net." That's a commentary of the character of people, okay, in the tribulation time period. Verse 3, they may do evil with both hands earnestly, the prince, there's your politicians, asketh, and the judge, here come the judge, asketh for a reward, and the great man, and he uttereth his mischievous desire, so they wrap it up. That phrase that about wraps it up, dealing with the end of time. The best of them is as a briar, the most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of thy watchman and thy visitation cometh. Visitation in the Bible is reference to the second coming. Now shall be their perplexity. Trust ye not in a friend. Put ye not confidence in a guide. Keep the doors of thy mouth from her that lieth in thy bosom. Wife, spouse. For the son dishonoreth the father, and the daughter rise up against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies are the men of his own house. Okay, that is a commentary of the general character of people during the tribulation time period. Okay, it would be the commentary of people during a riot, you know, the LA riots. Okay, when things just go all haywire and cattywampus and everything. Okay, and so the best of them is a briar. Now, when you get in politics, the higher up they go, okay, and from county to state to federal, the more corrupt they become. And now they want to go to a global government? And that's going to make it better? Those guys at the top would sell their own mother out for a nickel. Okay, they have no scruples about them. None whatsoever. Okay, and that, you know, that's showing the downfall of a nation. Now, the sad thing is now you see it not just at the federal, it's at the state, not just at the state, it's at your county level, which is a mess. Of course, Lake County's got its, Lake County here has got its own reputation, clear to Washington, D.C. They call it the state of Lake. Okay, and I mean, you talk just absolute lying, corruption, fraud is just everywhere. You're not getting away from it. Okay, and so he says in verse 11, all men are liars. I mean, Americans habitually lie, and they don't think anything of it. Verse 12, what shall I render unto the Lord for his benefits toward me? And that's a good question. What can you and I give back to God for all that he's done for us? It's piddlings. I would say at least some gratitude. Be thankful for what he's given. And then some honor, to give him some honor. And then to give him our time, our life. I mean, that's the least a person could do. Paul puts it this way. He said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercy of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. I mean, that's just a reasonable thing to do. You know, some people, you know, like, you know, the people that are faithful to church on Easter and Christmas, you know, and all that stuff, like, oh, I'm going out of my way. I mean, you talk about a joke. Okay, but even at that, when we just do a little things for God, what can you and I give back to God that he hasn't given to us? And so, what can we do? Verse 12, what shall I render unto the Lord for all his benefits toward him? Probably the best thing you can do is praise, glorify, and worship him. Why? That's why we've been created. For his pleasure. I mean, think about it. How would you feel if you were a creator of so many millions and billions of people, and 99% of them could care less what you think? I mean, you could speak them out of existence, and they mock him and scoff him and live their life like he's never existed. And then some of them think they're as holy as he is and got their own little religion to be like him. Height of arrogance. So what's the best thing we could do for him? Verse 12, what shall I render unto the Lord? Praise, worship, gratitude. Trying to be a blessing to him. He says, verse 13, I will take the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. Now, spiritually, New Testament, you can get a lot out of that. Salvation is full and free in Jesus Christ. Calling on the name of the Lord, Romans 10:13. Okay, Old Testament doctrine, cup of salvation. Salvation generally is referring to the nation of Israel. But he says, I'll take it. Why? To honor Jesus Christ. Most people view God as a fire escape. Okay, and it got me a fire escape, and forget about the fire escape until I need to worry about a fire next time. And that's how most people are. You go to these big buildings in Chicago or big city, and you go on the back side of the building, and you'll see these fire escapes there, stairs there. You know, how many people in that building even consider those stairs? Well, if the fire starts, and that's about how they view God. Keep it out of sight, out of mind, in the back of the building. You know, and when I need it, then I'll jump on it. And when I need God, I'll, you know, come to him. But until then, you know, let me do my thing. Don't bother me. And that's the general attitude of people. Verse 14, he says, I will pay my vows unto the Lord now in the presence of all his people. Okay, these are spiritual vows. Okay, under the Judaism. And then he says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Okay, where he says that he is not pleased with the death of the wicked, but he says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Now, there's a book, I'm sure they sell it down at Bible Baptist bookstore, and I got a copy somewhere. But the title of the book is The Last Words of Saints and Sinners Alike. Okay, and Good book to read. And what this is gives accounts of people when they die, saints and sinners, okay, where you have some saints where they'll talk about seeing the angels come to take their soul. They'll talk about seeing the portals of heaven. They'll talk about seeing Jesus Christ. There will be a joy, a peace that they have about them. And then they have the last words of people like Voltaire or Thomas Paine. He was an atheist. Okay, and wicked men where they, you know, are screaming, going out, where angels are coming and putting chains around, take them out. And the Lord, as they're making this transition from the physical to the spiritual world, the Lord allows people to verbalize what they're seeing. Now, you don't hear much about it today, because a lot of people on their deathbed today are so doped up that you don't hear them going through it. Where, boy, in the old days, you'd hear a lot about these things. And so, that right there, the way to die peacefully, that if that's the only thing good about Christianity, that would be good enough. A proper way to die. Okay, so he says, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. O Lord, truly I am thy servant. I am thy servant and the son of thine handmaid. Thou hast loosed my bonds." Bonds as in jail. "I will offer to thee the sacrifice of thanksgiving and will call upon the name of the Lord." Okay, that sacrifice of thanksgiving, mention I've got Hebrews 13 there. Okay, and the reason why it's put in Hebrews is because that letter is written to the Hebrews of the tribulation time period. It's amazing to me, and of course this is human nature, the more a person has or gets, or is given to, the less they appreciate it. Look at the Americans. They don't call government subsidies. They call them entitlement. I'm entitled to it. You know, I remember when they shifted that word. It was during the Clinton administration, where they called all government handouts entitlements. And now you got these knuckleheads, "I have a right to health care. It's a constitutional right." Bunch of knuckleheads. Where are they going to get the money? Out of thin air? Hey, you can only do that for so long. And they're just, I mean, people just, they just don't think about these things. And, you know, Mike Roberts, here he's working with Vietnamese people who are poor, and he doesn't give a Bible to any of his men. He doesn't give Bibles to his men. He has them pay for them. Now, he doesn't have them pay what they pay, what he paid for. He obviously loses money, but the Vietnamese culture, when you give something to someone, they don't take that. It hurts their integrity. So even though these men are poor, he has them pay something. So you see, when a person has to pay for something, they, if they save the money beforehand, of course, that's an unknown factor in this culture, to save up money and pay cash for something, you know, where I can just flip the credit card or go to the bank or borrow something and then have to pay it backwards. Okay, but if somebody sacrificed and saved their money, they will appreciate what they purchased. Several years ago, Heidi, when she bought the Volkswagen Beetle, that diesel, we got that out of Knoxville, Tennessee, off eBay, is one of our eBay things. So her and I drive down there, and she had saved $8,000 cash in little glass jars in our house in a safe. Okay, and I think one was a little freezer plastic thing. And we get down there, and I just said to Heidi, "You got your money?" She said, "Yep." And so she starts whipping out the cash, and that guy's looking at this cash. And it got down to where it was like, I don't know, $8,000 and maybe 25 cents. Or, you know, it had some change in there. And I said, you got that? She says, no, it's out in the car. I said, okay, go get it. And this guy's saying, he brought his children. He said, you got to come in here and see this. He said, she saved all that money? I said, uh-huh. I said, you don't need to worry about that chance. I said, no, she needs to go get that. He said, oh, I know what you're doing. I said, yeah, she's going to appreciate that. You see, and she saved that up, and of course, that's what we've encouraged all of them to do. Okay, where they pay cash for that car, and it's paid for. No interest. It's a depreciating item. It's going down anyway. Okay, and so it's appreciated. When a person is just, when you just constantly give and give and give and give to a person, they get to the point where they expect it. You know, basically the average way the person goes, if you just walked up to somebody on a Monday and gave them a $20 bill, you just in your heart want to give them $20 that day and you gave it to them, and then the following Monday you thought, you know, I got a blessing, I'm going to do that again. So you gave them, the same person gave them the $20 the next Monday, and you did that a third Monday and a fourth Monday, their attitude would be, they'd be get used to grabbing it and taking it. And then if you stop, they're going to say, hey, instead of thank you for all the past, they're going to expect it. And the Lord just shells out to you and I, and shells out. And how many times we stop and say thank you? Worship Him. Gratitude. Gratefulness. Okay, so this is the offer to thee the sacrifice of thanksgiving. Verse 17. Too bad we don't have Thanksgiving one day a year. Okay, but thanksgiving will call upon the name of the Lord. Verse 18, I will pay my vows unto the Lord now in the presence of all His people. So he is publicly praising his God. And then 19, in the courts of the Lord's house, in the midst of thee, O Jerusalem, praise ye the Lord. Okay, courts, plural. That doctrinally, when you have plural courts, would bring that into the millennium, because in the Old Testament they had Solomon's porch, or one court of the Jewish temple. And in the millennium they're going to have multiple courts. So in the courts of the Lord's house, Ezekiel 40 to 48, in the midst of thee, O Jerusalem. Okay, and that's what he's aiming at. That's why it's called the land of the living up there in verse 9. Okay, that's only got one psalm there, 116. We'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Are we covered? Jeremy?